Welcome to episode number 169.
It's time for the RV Podcast. Traveling North America in an RV. Exploring, camping, boondocking, embracing the RV lifestyle, and sharing tips and where to go and how to keep things running right. Here's award-winning journalist Mike Wendland and his network of RV reporters.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another edition of the RV Podcast. And it doesn't make any difference what kind of an RV you have, whether it's a motorhome, a towable trailer, a tent, even if you're just dreaming about maybe getting an RV someday. This show is for you because on this podcast, we talk about being out there, enjoying God's amazing creation, meeting fun people, boondocking, discovering interesting places, and using the right gear and technology to enhance the RV lifestyle. So we welcome you and are honored that you chose to put us in your ear this week. Well, this week we meet the Russos, Joe and Kate. They're a California couple in their early 30s who quit their corporate jobs for a life of full-time travel in an RV. And we'll hear their story, how it applies to you, no matter what age you happen to be, and the pros and cons of living in a van. Plus, lots of questions this week that came in from you and our listening people from all across the country. Tech tips and a must-visit national park report that needs to be on your bucket list. But first, my lifelong traveling companion and my bride, Jennifer. Hello, dear.
Hello, Michael.
How are you?
I'm doing fantastic.
Well, we're back in our sticks and bricks home in Michigan, southeastern Michigan, and we'll be here for actually a couple weeks unless we can sneak up for a weekend boondocking up in the woods.
We'll see. Today it turned cold.
Yes, it's been unusually mild here in the 50s, which is in no snow at all, and as we are recording this, the winds are blustery, and it's supposed to dip down into the teens tonight, so I'm glad we got our RV winterized.
And I'm ready for it.
Yep. You're ready for snow?
I'm ready for snow.
We're getting ready for Christmas. We got a tree that's about half up. We got
about
a
half up.
It's up, you know, and the lights are on. That's half of the job.
Yeah. I kind of get sidetracked all the time.
And you are I should point out, you are a Christmas ornament collector.
I love ornaments. I like to collect ornaments from everywhere we go.
And we have a gazillion of them. We got some new ones this year. I saw there's one from the Badlands.
Mm-hmm.
And every place
and the Biltmore.
And the Biltmore, yeah. So anyway, I don't know if you do that, the listeners, whether you guys do that as well, but that's what Jennifer does. Every place we go, I used to buy magnets, and they covered up our refrigerator, and then they covered up everything in the RV.
Yeah,
and then
the magnets are a little tacky.
Then we got pins, and I put those on my hat, and my hat was so heavy, I finally had to take them off. So now, just you and Christmas ornaments.
Should make ornaments out of the magnets. Figure out a way to put a hook on them. And that would be kind of, I would like.
That's not a bad idea.
Now that's a good idea.
That's a really good idea. We'll have to make a Jennifer tip of the week of that coming up. I like that.
There's a way. Where there's a will, there's a way.
Well, we're back home. We spent most of last week in Louisville, Kentucky, and the big national RV trade show there. And I'm still editing a couple of videos of interesting things we came across on the show. I hope to get one up in the next day or so and another one early next week. There's so much to see there.
Wow. I had fun.
Yeah. Why did we enjoy that show so much?
I don't know. It wasn't crazy. It was relaxing and just a nice getaway.
It's not open to the public, so the crowds are way down. It's mostly dealers and RV manufacturers and people who make appliances and various RV accessories. And so the crowds are only about 5,000.
And I'm extremely curious. I love going into unit after unit after unit.
Yeah, and you can do that. It's not quite so crowded with everybody and you always kind of hate to go in if somebody's looking to buy it, you know, and you feel like you're interfering with them. But in our case, we just had a good time.
I don't know why, but we did.
Yeah, we did one video just of the stuff, like we travel serendipitously, we do these shows serendipitously. We just drive around, walk around, and whenever we see something we like, we stop and, hey, let's do a story.
And I know why we had fun, too, because we were seeing friends friendships that we've made in the past. Lots we're seeing a lot of people that we like.
Yep, you've got one of them that'll be coming up in just a minute on your tip of the week, and we had a pretty good time. Came back with a cold, I think. I don't know. I think that came from our pal Joe Ritano, who brought back the creeping crud from Puerto Rico.
Came from being in a middle school.
Oh, I was in middle school Friday night for a summer.
Yeah, those are a little.
Yeah, I didn't see it, but Joe was sick. Joe had come back with something that he caught in Puerto Rico.
I don't think it was Joe. You can't blame somebody.
I'm
going to
blame Joe.
You can blame Joe. Yeah, I'd be more apt to think it was the middle school.
I just think that you always have to. Let's just blame Joe. I think that sounds good. No, I don't think Joe listens to the podcast, so he's not going to get mad at me.
I just don't want your cold. Yeah. Keep your cold to yourself, please.
I will do that. A couple of things in the news this week before we get into the regular segments. We had a great time this year up in Canada, as many other RVers did, because it was their centennial, their 100th, what is it? What do you call 150th? 150th anniversary. And they had a free birthday bash where everybody, no matter where you were from, got free admission to national parks. I just heard, that ends, by the way, on December 31st. So if you're up, you can get to any national park in Canada. It's still
free.
It's still free this year. But you know what they're going to do next year? They're going to make it free for kids. All national parks from permanently for
kids.
What
do you mean kids? What's
you know,
the cutoff?
Under 12, 13, whatever kids are. I don't know.
So if you have kids, you get to come in free?
No, just the kids.
They charge by person? By Okay, I don't quite know how that works.
Yep. The environment minister said they're going to extend it to children, whatever that means, and they're making plans. They'll announce it, but kids free. I don't know. You know, I thought they'd be free if they're in a car, but I think they charge you by head. So anyway, that's we had a really great time, and it introduced us to a couple of national parks that we had not seen before, and we look forward to actually visiting some more. We do our annual trek west, and I think we'll head up and revisit Banff, and we'll revisit Waterton and Jasper and some of those places up there. We're planning on a couple of provincial parks in Canada as well. Canada has some great parks.
Canada
awesome
is beautiful.
Camping. Yeah, awesome camping. A lot of controversy this week over some action by the Trump administration. Monday, this being December, what is today, the 6th, as this edition comes out, on Monday of this week, President Trump drastically scaled back two national monuments in Utah that were established by his Democratic predecessors. And everybody, there's a big stink over it. Bear's Ear and the Grand Staircase Escalante in Utah are national monuments. And they're huge. It's impossible to wrap your mind around how big 1.1 million acres is. That's how big Bear's Ear is. And 800,000 acres for the Grand Staircase Escalante. So he's cut back on those drastically, and this was favored largely by everybody in Utah, not everybody, but most people. So he's getting a lot of praise from that, an outpouring of praise from a lot of Utah lawmakers, you know, whose constituents want it for ranching and various leasing it for energy exploration, maybe ATV use so people can go in and explore a little easier. So a lot of people in the state itself like it, but there are some who are opposed to it. Among others, the Outdoor Industry Association. They say that businesses have been thriving around the area of these monuments, and that as you cut back in size, that maybe people won't feel they want to go visit them because they're not as big as they were. So anyway, a lot of controversy. There's some other national monuments under review. We'll stay politically out of it, other than to say we like national monuments. We really do.
I don't know enough about the details of it.
I know Utah is like, it's probably the best state to go if you want to see really diverse and spectacular national parks and monuments. You got Zion there, you got Bryce, you got these national monuments, you've got Arches National Park. I mean, much of Utah is federal land and protected as parks or monuments. So But we love it. In fact, I hope we can get to Utah this year. We were blown away. Just how gorgeous.
Utah is such a beautiful, beautiful state.
It is. So, but lots of controversy over this, and we'll kind of keep our eye on it. There's a number of other national monuments around the country that are being looked at. They're not a national park, but they're treated much the same way. And it's very limited what you can do and often where you can go to visit in those parks or those monuments. So you'll see lots of controversy coming. And let's see, what else? What do we have headed for travel? Just the next big thing for sure, unless we sneak away for a quick trip to get some sunshine after the New Year. Next one is our winter camp out up at Tequamenon Falls in the Upper Peninsula, which, did I tell you, it is pretty much sold out?
Good.
The whole park?
Well, they always have to save a few places.
I think just a few. They only have a half dozen or so they keep for walk-ins.
Yeah, so if somebody wanted to come, they probably could come.
Well, not many of them. I just looked at a map the other day, and the way we do this one is, this gathering is, we started this, I think this will be our fifth year. The first year, we just were the only ones there, you and me.
Yeah, and so we decided that we just say whoever wanted to come could come.
And we had such a good time. We said, hey, we're going to go back next year. And then about, I don't know, 10, 12 came, and then about 25, and then about 50. And now we are approaching, in terms of people, 100 people.
We need more than one campfire.
Yeah,
That's all I got to say. I lobbied for that last year.
Well, we have a place. We can make our own campfire.
You need more than one campfire.
The trouble is they make a really big campfire, but only those who are close to it get warmed. The second row and third row, and that's how many people we need.
Chilly.
Get a bit nippy out there in the middle of the Upper Peninsula of Michigan in January. So we need multiple campfires this year to keep everybody wrong. All right. So that is pretty much what we are up to in this part of the podcast has been brought to you by Campers Inn. They are the nation's trusted resource for over 50 years when it comes to RVs, the nation's largest family-operated RV dealership, now with 19 locations and still growing. The thing that about Campers Inn that they're so well known for is rock-bottom deals on motorhomes, fifth wheels, campers of all kinds at all of their locations. They are proud to announce these 19 locations in the U.S., the newest one in Ocala, Florida, and new dealerships coming to Ackworth, Georgia, and Thornburg, Virginia in early 2018. So if you live nearby or just passing through, stop in. They would love to see you. Campers Inn is home of the Integrity Pricing Guarantee, and you will appreciate that if you're looking for a new RV, because that means all quotes you get for a new RV include everything. Freight, orientation, detailing, prep. You don't get a really good price, and then at the end you see all these add-ons, as some dealers do, not at Campers Inn. It's the Integrity Pricing Guarantee. You will never be surprised by hidden upcharges and fees. They sell motorhomes, travel trailers, and more from all of the leading manufacturers in the industry. They have award-winning RV sales and service, hundreds of RVs, all of them at the best prices and certified, trained service personnel, which is extremely important. Check them out, campersinn.com.
Is that a gadget, a recipe, a tip? Whatever she has in store for us, it promises to make the RV lifestyle a little more fun or efficient. Here's Jennifer with her RV tip of the week.
We met lots of interesting people at the RV industry trade show last week in Louisville. One of our new friends is Janine Pettit, who has become an ambassador for what is called the Girl Camping Movement. Janine was a recent guest on episode 165 and talked with Mike at length about solo women campers. But in Louisville, Janine and I got to talk about something else that affects all of us, unloading and cleaning our RVs after a trip. We recorded the conversation and you get to listen in.
All right, I'd like to introduce you to Jean Pettit. She was on the show a couple weeks ago, and she's a blogger. And Janine, can you tell us how to make it easier to get out the door?
Well, you know what, Jennifer? I find that when I want to go for just one of those short weekend trips, and it's been a very busy week, the temptation is to say, oh, let's just light the fire pit in the backyard and stay home, right? But now I do this thing. When I get home from a trip the weekend before, no matter how tired I am on Sunday, I get all the food out of the refrigerator, which is normal. But now I strip the beds, I bring in all the laundry, even if I don't wash those sheets and linens till Wednesday, they're in the house. And I'm not going to have to go out there Friday morning and do that. It's one less task for Friday morning. I do a thorough clean of the camper. I wipe down the floors, the tables, the counters, the sink. I get anything out of there that's food-wise that isn't going to last. And so when Friday morning rolls around, all I have to do is bring my clean linens out there and I'm ready to go.
That is great advice. I try to do the same. We get home late at night. I get the food, I get the clothes, and get everything out of there because Mike has really gotten upset with me in the past. So keep going like that. But cleaning the floors and sinks and everything, usually maybe the next day.
Right.
If it's too late at night, but I'm all with you. Get
and
it
you know
done.
What?
It makes it easier.
And I found that I can really do it in 20 minutes. It really does not take that long. My camper is a small one. I have the 2018 Max by Liberty Outdoors. I can wipe that thing down, and when I walk in there on Friday morning with my clean linens, all I have to do is put my half and half in the fridge, and I'm gone.
I agree. It's so much easier to tend to everything that you can tend to that night when you get home, because otherwise the dread of putting it off and having to do it. And it's hard enough to get out the door the next weekend, packing everything, getting it ready. And you don't want that surprise to open up a cupboard and there's a bunch of dirty clothes. Or,
yes.
Yeah, I'm all with you. We're on the same page with this.
Thank you, Jennifer.
Thank you.
And be sure to send me your tips and suggestions for the RV lifestyle. You can use the leave voicemail link at roadtrekking.com. Just click it and then use the built-in microphone on your computer or mobile device to record a message to me. You can do it over as many times as you want until you're satisfied. And then you just click a button and it comes right to my email inbox. I love hearing from you.
Jennifer's Tip of the Week is brought to you by Rad Power Bikes, an electric bike manufacturer offering direct-to-consumer pricing on powerful and premium electric bikes now with free shipping. I talked to a lot of people in Louisville who were asking me about e-bikes. It finally has caught on and has become something that you see almost every time you go camping. And more often than not, I think you're seeing Rad Power Bikes out there because they are a direct electric bike company that deals direct with the consumer. They make four different models. You don't have to go through a retail chain or middle people or any of that stuff. Because they're a consumer direct brand, you get premium electric bikes without the huge markups caused by dealers and third-party retailers, priced often less than half the cost of a comparable bike on the market because, again, that dealer retail markup is cut out. On top of their already awesome prices, they have some pretty awesome models, four different models of electric bikes. They have 750 watts of power on those models. That's the most powerful model an e-bike can have while maintaining a street legal status, meaning you don't have to have a special license for it or any kind of license for that matter. You can ride it anywhere just as you ride a bicycle, whether you have a license or not. All four Rad Power Bike models can reach 20 miles per hour with zero pedaling, and they give riders the choice to ride pedal-free with throttle, or you can utilize three different levels of pedal assist and get that extra boost or a combination of the two. You can go between 20 and 40 miles on a single charge. You need to check them out. You really do. Whether you want to keep up with friends or just get that little extra boost when you're out there pedaling up a hill, check them out. RadPowerBikes.com. And when you mention Road Trekking as your coupon code, not only do you get free shipping, which is a big deal, you get $75 off the retail price. Check them out. RadPowerBikes.com.
Questions? You've got them. Mike and his network of RV reporters have the answers. Here's one of our questions of the week.
Well, you know, the week when we feature email questions, our voice questions all pile up. So we have a bunch of them that we got to catch, and I even had to put a couple over for next week. But lots of questions from a lot of people. The first of all is more of a comment that came from a listener named Daryl. Daryl heard our podcast last week, Jennifer, where we were talking about some of the problems that the RV industry was facing, including a lack of campground spaces caused by those booming RV sales. Daryl raises, I think, a related and equally serious issue, which is the shameful state of disrepair that characterizes some campground. Let's listen to Daryl.
Hey, Mike and Jennifer. This is Daryl from Georgia. We saw your video last night, Facebook Live from Louisville, where you asked for input for the major issues facing RVers. last night we stayed at a campground in Tennessee, and it's pretty run down. And we were kind of sort of negative feeling about it. And then I looked up the reviews for the KOA that's about a mile or two down the road here, and it's described by users as the worst KOA that stayed in the country. I think something that's going to really impact new people to RVs is going to be the state of the campgrounds, not just availability. People do not expect to spend the kind of money that they're spending buying new RVs now to stay in rundown campgrounds that aren't appealing to them and their families. So that's one key thing that I think you can pass on to the people there in Louisville, that campgrounds need to up their game. They not only need to be available, they need to be fairly priced, and they've got to take care of themselves. And we see time and time again, aging, deteriorating infrastructure in the bathhouses, in the sites, stuff like that. So anyway, 2 cents worth from Georgia. Thanks for all you do.
Well, thank you, Daryl. Well, we've stayed at a few bad campgrounds.
Yeah, we've stayed at many bad campgrounds.
I will say, generally, we have found that KOAs are always, almost always, really
in
great shape. I think that we only had a couple of negative experiences, and one had to do with a big storm that had gone through on one campground. They just didn't have things fixed. There was a lot of flooding. And the other was just, it was a very busy place, and the guy was trying to accommodate everybody, but I've always found KOA. In fact, we sort of prefer staying in them if we need to do laundry, if we're heading someplace, because there's a standard of service that we have come to expect that we usually find all the time at KOA. That said, I think Daryl hit it on the nose. That is a big issue.
It takes a lot of money to run a campground.
Now, you went to one of those seminars last week at the trade show where they were talking about campgrounds, and they talked about how costly they were. But
I talked about $3 million to start a campground.
Really?
Yeah, and if you made a mistake, if you're just, an average small family, can't make a mistake.
No.
Talking about getting government money as well as private money involved in a campground. But man, once they get old, to try to make them good and try to make a living.
Well, it's hard. You have to keep the electricity and all those wires, running, right? You don't want them to cause damage to a unit. And didn't you say it cost $10,000 to $15,000
for every campsite?
To develop a campsite, $10,000 to $15,000. Wow, that is a lot more than I would.
It's
not just
a
slab of dirt, a slab of concrete or some grated gravel, is it?
And how can you say this nicely? Once you have a campground, then you get a certain amount of people that work and live in the campground.
Yes. Yeah.
Maybe a different need than people traveling through, moving through.
That's true.
I wouldn't want to try to make a living running a campground.
No, it's tough. They work. We've met a couple of families that we have, we've met as we go and come and stay in the same place a lot. And their families oftentimes that run them, the kids help, the dad and mom all work, and they're there all day long and all night long. And if something goes wrong, they're on call. It's not an easy job.
But they have to be taken care of, because you don't want to spend a whole bunch of money and then go stay in a dumpy place.
You don't want to stay in a ghetto after you spent all that money for a new RV or even a used one. Well, Daryl, thank you for calling that in. And I think the industry is aware of it. Jennifer did attend a seminar last week where they were all talking about the need for more campgrounds and
upgrading
the current ones. So I think we'll hear a lot about that over the next year. Money, like everything.
Yeah.
All right. Another nice call came in from a listener named Cheryl.
Good morning, Mike and Jennifer. I just wanted to tell you that I absolutely love your 10 gifts. Most people are doing the same things over and over again, but you had some really unique products on there. They weren't very expensive, and they made absolute sense. So I wanted to thank you for your list that you did. Great job. Keep it up. And my name is Cheryl Maloney, and I love your channel. Have a great day.
Thank you. Cheryl's talking about our RV Lifestyle channel on YouTube, and you can go to it just at rvlifestylechannel.com, all one words, rvlifestylechannel.com. That was a fun video to do.
It was fun to make.
We got all dressed up in our little Christmas spirit. Everybody liked your your sweater.
My sweater, that sweater that's over 20 years old.
Is that how old it is?
Yes, I'm glad I didn't throw it away.
It worked really well on TV.
It did. Yeah. I had a snow shirt on, and you said, no, 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 where's your Christmas sweater?
Yeah, I didn't. Yeah.
A snowman shirt that was I thought was cute, but
yeah, well,
it made me blow the dust off the Christmas sweater.
Yeah, well, that was fun having you wear your Christmas sweater. Thank you, Cheryl. I'll put a link to that if you didn't see it. It's our top 10 holiday gift suggestions that we came up with for RVers, and we've had a lot of fun putting it together. And as we put it together, we realized how many other things we've bought and have for RV that, you know, it's hard to keep it to 10. So we had a lot of fun, though.
We did.
It was fun. All right. Carl has a question.
Hello, Mike and Jen. My name is Carl. I live in Pennsylvania. Enjoyed listening to your podcast for the last couple of years since we bought a travel trailer. We don't actually have a Class B. But I like the way you kind of include everybody, and anyone can enjoy your shows. So thanks for what you do. My question is, do you have any suggestions or have ever talked to the industry that makes RV refrigerators? As it seems, there's been a rash of fires and whatnot being caused by them. If there's anything we can do maintenance-wise or preventative-wise to keep our family safe as we're traveling and camping. Hopefully I'll hear a response, and keep up the good work, and love listening to your show. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Carl.
This sounds like an interview of the week. Can you find somebody who can talk about refrigerators?
Yeah, we probably should get somebody from one of the big companies, or even our friend Mark Polk from RV Education 101 to talk about. There have been a rash of fires, but before you say the refrigerator, it's often because of the propane that most refrigerators run on. There's a lot of controversy about whether you should keep your propane on and your refrigerator running on propane as you're driving because of that fire, and it could go out and it could, you know, cause a, you know, a buildup of propane that could start a fire. We leave ours on all the time. If not had a problem, I think probably half and half. Some turn them off, some don't. But that's an issue that's above my pay grade. But I know there's a couple of class action lawsuits that have been filed against RV refrigerator makers. Most of those can be avoided, most fires from a refrigerator, by having it checked out at the start of each season by an RV dealer. Have somebody or a RV, somebody who's an expert in RV refrigerators, have them check it out. You want to check your propane connection. Sometimes mice build nests back there, and if they get into your RV, you need to be aware of it and to check that. Check your propane always, your regulator on your propane, the connectors on it. That should just be a part of something that you do every year before you set it out on the road. But Jennifer, you raise a good point. I think that is probably worth getting somebody to come on and talk to us a little bit about what we can do to keep our RV refrigerators in good condition all the time. All right, here's a question that came in from David, and I think David is planning to be a new RVer. He's looking to buy one, or he just did. Let's listen in.
Hi, Mike and Jennifer. This is David from California. After traveling through Europe in a Volkswagen camper van for 3 months, 35 years ago, my wife and I are getting back into RVing and are planning on buying a road trek. We're learning a lot from your podcast, but I need your help to understand something. Considering that road treks consist of a road trek body that is built on an automotive chassis such as Mercedes or Dodge, do RV dealers handle repairs and maintenance of both aspects, or does one have to go to a Mercedes or Dodge dealer for any problems that one has with the automotive system? I look forward to your answer. Thank you.
Well, just a slight correction. I don't know if we heard you wrong, but the most Class Bs are built on the existing chassis. Now, they may widen them a bit, but they're not just a box. They don't take a stripped-down chassis and then put a box on them. We've watched the procedure, in particular on road trek Class Bs, and the Mercedes Sprinter van, and then the RV parts go on the inside and are custom built to fit inside, and it's all customized. And that's the way it is with most other Class Bs. Some of the larger Cs and As, Class Cs, Class As, are indeed they take a chassis, they take everything off the chassis except the cab and the driver's compartment there, and then they just basically strap a box on, and that's what they fix up. But they're two different elements.
Yeah, the automotive part, you need to find the Mercedes dealer or the Dodge.
The Chevy dealer, Dodge, yep, absolutely. Yeah.
You have to go to them.
They do the mechanical work on anything that would be considered automotive or truck related. I know on our Sprinter, we go to a dealer that sells Sprinters and services Sprinters. They also service school buses. So I've learned that late August is a tough time to go in because they're doing all the maintenance on the school buses in the district that they're in. But there's a network of Mercedes and Sprinter dealers around the country for those of us using Sprinters. And of course, if you have a Chevy or a Dodge ProMaster chassis or even the Ford Transit that we're seeing on some other RVs now, you would go to the Ford, Chevy, or the Dodge dealer, and they would do all of the mechanical work, you know, on the engine. And the RV people, they do the stuff that's inside that makes it RV, you know. They also handle warranty claims for your microwave and your refrigerator and your heater and all that stuff. But all the RV part of it that's on the interior, that's done by the RV dealer. So hope that helps. All right, let's go to one more question this week. This comes from Gene, who has a very timely and seasonal question to ask about RV use in the winter.
Yeah, this is Jean. I'm a new road trekkie, and I'm wondering about using your bathroom during the winter time. How do you actually use that? Because we were out on our first trip this weekend, and it was awfully cold. We had to run to the campsite bathroom. Thanks so much.
Well, hey, wait till you go up with us in January and we have to use an outhouse. Good thing about the outhouse is it's all frozen, so there's no odor. But man, is it cold in there.
Don't tell people that. By the end of a day or two, there's odor.
Oh, yeah, I guess that's true with all the people that we have.
Right.
Gene, you certainly can use your RV bathroom in the wintertime. And the way you use it is, let's put it as delicately as I can, whatever you deposit in that toilet, you put an equal amount of RV antifreeze in and use that to flush it in place of water, because your plumbing system in your RV has been winterized. You've run air antifreeze through it. Your water pump is off. So to flush that toilet, you put in liquid antifreeze, RV antifreeze, and you do it that way. And
so then if you want to empty it, you got enough antifreeze that it'll empty?
Yes, it doesn't freeze it completely. It kind of is like a, it's disgusting. It becomes kind of like a Slurpee, you know. It's kind of like,
that's a bad way to describe it.
Well, that's what it looks like. I mean, it will come out your
so make sure your
macerator
or
your gravity. Yeah, use, and the rule of thumb is whatever you put in, put an equal amount of RV antifreeze in. Now, you can't necessarily use your showers because your plumbing system is shut down. Yeah, you don't want to wash. RV antifreeze is food grade safe, but it's sweet, sticky stuff, you know. I don't think you want
to. I am so glad that I'm claiming girl role and you get to tend to that.
Yes, well, it's one of the few things that you really insist on. You do everything else, so I do. But anyway, Gene, you can camp in the winter. You can use your bathroom. A lot of people kind of compromise on it. You know, if they're in a campground that has heated restrooms particularly and showers, they'll use those as often as they can. And in the middle of the night, you know, so you don't have to get all bundled up, you'll use your RV restroom. But that is about the only thing you have to do different with winter camping. And just that RV pink stuff, as they call it, that antifreeze, that's what you need to know. Sponsoring this part of the podcast is Van City RV, bringing you the largest inventory of Class B RVs now with locations in St. Louis, Missouri, Las Vegas, Nevada, Kalispell, Montana, and their latest store, Colorado Springs, Colorado. Effective January 1, all of those stores are now known as Van City RV, and they're all about the same thing, the American dream, living rich and full on the land, traveling the open road. That's what Van City is all about since 1970, and they have been delivering that dream to families across the nation. Jennifer and I have visited Van City RV. We have met the staff. We've heard from many of you listeners over the years who've described your experience with Van City with phrases like, we were treated like royalty at Van City RV, or awesome service, honest and forthright, helpful and honest. All four Van City RVs have a buy and fly program where you fly in to purchase your new RV from Van City. You'll receive five-star treatment transportation from the airport, $500 towards your airfare, and, of course, your new RV, fully prepped for travel, complete with full tanks of fuel and propane. After a complete 360 orientation, you will take delivery, and you'll set out for 2 nights of camping nearby, completely set up at the park like a veteran RVer. And if you have any questions, Van City RV will be right there to answer them in person or by phone. This first-class service is matched with a selection of major top brand names like Coachman, Dynamax, Road Trek, Leisure Travel Vans, Renegade, Erwinheimer, Gulfstream, Midwest Automotive, and of course Chinook. They're top quality brands you can be sure of. All of them, Class B, or sometimes they have some C's in as well. Van City RV, you will be delighted to do business with them.
You're listening to the RV Podcast. You can find show notes, links to resources and websites Mike and his guests mention, and background material, videos and photos on the RVPodcast.com travel blog. And you can also send Mike a voice question to answer on the podcast. Just click the send voicemail button on RV Podcast.
Joe and Kate Russo are travel writers and videographers who live, along with their dog Leo, full-time in a Class B RV. They're in a Hymer Active right now, or Hymer Active, however you want to pronounce it. They both are good. But it didn't used to be that way. For years, this couple, originally from California, where they were, that's where they came from, worked in demanding jobs with a desire for adventure and travel, but they didn't have a lot of vacation time to do it. Well, that changed in 2015 when Joe and Kate dramatically downsized. They quit their 9-to-5 jobs. They decided to hit the road in an RV. Now, a lot of people share that dream. A lot of people would like to do the very same thing. Well, Joe recently wrote a book about their decision called Take Risks, One Couple's Journey to Quit Their Jobs and Hit the Open Road. And Joe Russo joins us right now on the podcast. Joe, welcome to the podcast. We are delighted to have you.
Thank you, Mike. It's exciting to be here.
Now, as a fellow Class B dwellers with us, I've followed a lot of your stuff, and we'll put links to it in the show notes for this episode. But let's start off with, tell us a little bit about you and Kate and what your life was like pre-RV and what it's like now.
Oh, man. Well, let's see. Kate and I have been together for 12 years now. And back in the day before this, you know, our full-time life on the road, we were, you know, we had a house in suburbia. We had the typical corporate jobs working nine to five would have been a short day for us. But, you know, we had the life where we would work all day. We'd come home. We'd be on our phones, checking email. And we found that life to be, we're getting in this cycle of work, 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 play as hard as we could on the weekends, buy a bunch of stuff that we thought we needed, and then go back, work, work, work. And we barely got to see each other at night. Plus, we had another dog at the time with Leo. And we barely got to spend time with the two boys. So we were really trying to find a way that we could get out there and really just live the life. And there was one morning we were watching a movie called We're the Millers. It was Mother's Day. And we were planning on going over to Kate's mother's or Kate's parents' house. Well, we watched this movie, got on the road, got to her parents' house, and something just popped up in Kate's brain that said, you know what, let's quit our jobs, hit the road, sell the house, get rid of all the stuff we own, and just live on the road for a while. And that movie, We're the Millers, which is where we got our name, We're the Russos, is kind of what inspired her, because it's a family that goes cross country in an RV. Now, there's a lot more to the story, of course. Yeah. But
little journey down into Mexico, I think, on that one?
Exactly. Yeah. They were drug running from Mexico and had a fake family.
But well, let's clear this up. You're not doing that. That's not what inspired you.
No.
It's the life on the road. Yep. Okay.
Exactly. Yeah. There is something about being in that RV in the movie, traveling across the country and really being able to see things and spend time with each other, that clicked with Kate. And when she told me, I told her she was crazy. But that evening, after we had dinner with her parents, I left to go visit my mother and thought about something my father had told me right before he passed away, which was his last words of advice to me were, take risks and have a lot of children. Now, we haven't had a lot of children, but you know, I thought about that, and he really said that he wished he had taken more risks in his life. And I said, you know, this is really a risk worth taking. We could really do something here, and I could look back in 20 years and really regret not taking this chance while we could. So we decided to do it. And the book is all about starting at that moment where we both decided to, you know, do this, and all of the planning and everything that went into getting on the road.
How long did that process take?
This was Mother's Day 2014, and we hit the road September 13th, 2015.
That's fast.
But we had actually been planning to do something else with our lives for a while. So I would say it took us probably about 5 years of thinking that we wanted to do something else, and then Kate finally coming up with this idea and then us hitting the road.
To tell us what you did in the previous life, what you did for occupation, and for our listeners who don't know you guys, give us an idea on your ages as well.
So Kate and I are both in our mid-30s. My former life was, I was in advertising and product development. So I worked for Fortune 500 company. I was, you know, in there working on basically advertising products and figuring out ways to make more money for the company. Kate was in marketing, and she's still doing that with now our company for YouTube, the website, the book, and everything else. So it's been nice. We've been able to transition those careers into what we're doing today.
Now, a lot of people hear this and they say, well, they have special skills. We all make a million excuses for not taking risks and for not taking the plunge. Some people are maybe even a couple of decades older than you guys, not yet near official retirement age, but they're just barely hanging on, and they really want to go do this life. Talk about the challenges, first of all, that you guys encountered and that others who follow in your tire treads there on your RV, what they would encounter as well.
Absolutely. I think the biggest challenge is trying to shrug off the social norms that we've all been told are what we are supposed to do. There's the American dream. There is the whole thing about working as hard as you can all the way up until you're in your 60s, and then you finally get to enjoy life. And making as much money as you can so you can buy the new car, the new house, all the things for your house. And just, it's just this whole cycle. And trying to break that is very difficult. We both struggled with it. When we told other people what we were doing, we encountered the resistance from them. So, you know, like parents and friends saying, you guys are crazy. You can't give up great careers, health insurance, retirement plans, and everything else. But I would say that was the biggest struggle and challenge for us, and trying to figure out how we could get around those things.
Uh-huh.
I don't think, Yeah. Go ahead.
How did you figure that out? And you obviously have to have some income coming in. Give us a description of what you guys found for the solution.
Well, originally we actually only planned to be on the road for a year. So we saved enough. We came up with a budget. We saved enough to be able to get the RV and go for a year. And our plan was that as we went around for the year, we would try to find an area of the country that we really loved and that we could settle down in, and then we would go back into our old careers. Well, a month in, we realized that was not going to happen. We had to stay on the road because we absolutely loved it. So we really started looking at ways we could make money on the road. And, you know, there are so many different options out there for people to do work camping, working remotely for other companies and things like that. But we found that the thing that really was unsatisfying for us in our previous life was always working for someone else and having to answer to a company or something like that. We found that we wanted to work for ourselves, and that's why we started the website and eventually the YouTube channel. Now the book, which is another source of income for us. And, you know, the whole thing, the book itself, and the reason why we're doing all of this is hopefully to inspire other people to get out there and live the life they want, be it on the road or something else they've always been dreaming of.
Are you finding people of your age in your generation? And again, I don't know, are you quite millennials? No, you're not millennials. You're Gen Xers, technically. Are you right in that middle? Are you finding other younger people doing just what you said? We keep hearing that it's becoming a trend. And now with the internet, lots of people can find lots of jobs they can do remotely. What are you encountering out there?
We're seeing more and more people our age hitting the road and doing this. And I think it's becoming a lot more socially acceptable. What I find really interesting is we've met and people have told us that because of what we're doing, they've been inspired to really get out there and live this life. People are doing this in their 40s, their 50s, pre-retirement, and really looking at ways they can retire early and not have to stay in their job for another 20 years. But what I find really interesting is when we meet other people in vans or class Bs, things like that, most of them tend to be younger. And we're actually starting to see a lot of millennials out there who are starting to embrace this life. And I think a big part of it is that minimalism mindset you have to have to live in a space this small.
We did a video in our early days, 10 rules for getting along in a Class B RV. And I think one of the key words was admit you're wrong and say I'm sorry when it's appropriate. And it does require quite an adjustment. Before we get to the benefits of it and the joys of it, talk about some of the other challenges. The internet, for example, you are very dependent on the internet, as I think are pretty much most full-timers that we find out there. How do you get your connections?
Right now, we're using our Verizon unlimited plan, and we use our phone as hotspots. So we can hop on the data on our phone through our laptops, and that's how we do, I would say, 95% of our work. Unfortunately, the Verizon unlimited plan isn't unlimited, so you get throttled after a certain amount of data usage. So those times, we'll go out, we'll find places with Wi-Fi. You know, prior to getting this plan, we spent a lot of times at Starbucks. That became our office. And as you probably well know, most of the time when you get to a campground or a place like that that has Wi-Fi, the connection is never good enough. So you either need to find a cafe or some other sort of establishment where there's a decent connection. But I would say that Verizon hotspot has really helped expand our horizons, and we don't have to worry as much now about, you know, where we're going to find our next Wi-Fi spot.
Yeah, we've done pretty much the same thing, although I've talked about it so much over 5 or 6 years, and now so many people are using them. You know, you log in at a campground or even when you're boondocking, and you may not even see anybody nearby, but you'll look and you'll see 100 different hotspots all around you. So that gets somewhat congested from time to time as well. But satellites coming down in price, and I guess my point here is that you use the internet probably more extensively than most other full-timers would, and you're not having any significant difficulties with it. So that's an obstacle that isn't really there. And plus, people are accustomed. Once you move out of your house, you're not paying that big cable bill that you had. So you can invest in that equipment a little bit more. And I think that really helps. Well, we talked about a little bit of the challenges getting along. Talk about the rewards now. Besides just seeing the country, what is it that you and Kate, as you quit your jobs, as you hit the open road, what is it that most excites you every day?
I would just say that, you know, we're happy, we're healthy. I can't tell you how much more relaxed we are living this lifestyle than when we were in the corporate world. In that corporate world, you're always running, you're late for something, or something always has to get done. Now, we live our lives the way we want to. And I would say the thing we're most excited about is always going to that new spot, getting there, relaxing, seeing the area. Our first year when we were in a Class A, we were moving. And what we've learned is just to slow down, get into a town, enjoy it, and really get that local flavor. And you can't do that when you go on vacation. You take a week or 2 weeks off, you go somewhere. You want to, you know, just kind of disconnect from work as much as possible and try to have as much fun as possible in those 2 weeks. For us, this is always a vacation for us. We can work when we want to. We can take time off when we want to and really just enjoy a place rather than be always rushing.
What were the differences in downsizing from a Class A to a Class B? How was that a hard adjustment to make, or did you adjust right to it?
You know, I think it was a cumulative process. So when we were in the Class A, we packed that thing as full as we could because we felt we had to replicate our lives that we had in a house in a motorhome. But as we went through, and one of the reasons or ways we decided that a Class B would be right for us is as we were in that Class A, we continued to downsize and get rid of things that we didn't use. And we were continually finding drawers and cabinets that were just empty in the Class A. We realized that we could keep going and downsize even more. And that's when we really started looking to move into a Class B full time. Once we got in here, again, we tried to pack it full of stuff, and we've been continually downsizing. And we've actually been looking at, you know, we've said we could go smaller than what we're in. So our Active 2.0 is the long version. And we've said we could go with the short version or something else that's shorter than this.
How about breakdowns on the road? Do you have to be technically proficient? Are you a handyman, or do you always find help?
I am a handyman, and I carry enough tools with me that I could do most things. I would definitely suggest that anyone who's going to be on the road full time, if they plan on doing any boondocking or camping, that's well away from established areas, that they should be at least proficient and understand all of their systems so they can get out of a jam and at least get back closer, because we've been a lot of places where there's no cell service and things of that nature.
And breakdowns do happen. These are complicated machines. Well, Joe Russo, you have been a delight, and I wish you great success with your book, your brand new book, Take Risks, One Couple's Journey to Quit Their Jobs and Hit the Open Road.
Thank you very much for having me on.
Thanks so much, Joe. Bye-bye. The interview of the week brought to you by SunshineStateRVs.com, where every new and used Road Trek motorhome is delivered to the customer free anywhere in the country. At Sunshine State RVs, you will find the largest selection of some of the best Class Bs in the United States of America, perhaps all of North America, in fact. If you're looking for a Class B RV, you need to make a trip to sunny Gainesville, Florida. Their RVs range from current years back to the early 90s. They have the most popular brands of used Class B RVs on the market: Road Trek, Pleasure Way, Winnebago, Leisure Travel Vans, and many more. you, I am convinced, will not find a wider selection anywhere of used Class B RVs. And they sell new RVs as well. They have the complete new lineup of Road Trek motorhomes in stock right now on their lot. And every RV that Sunshine State RVs sell has been through a very thorough 172-point inspection in which they ensure that all of the mechanical and the manual systems are in top condition. Every RV they sell is road tested to make sure it runs and drives the way it should. They go over the interior just as entirely as they do the outside, and every component is turned on and tested to make sure it works. All of their used RVs thoroughly cleaned and detailed inside and out. They even check the roof for cracks or replace any silicone caulking. If you buy from Sunshine State RVs, they will deliver it to your driveway free anywhere in America. Check them out, sunshinestaterVs.com.
Traveling with technology. It's time now for our RV tech tip of the week.
All right, our pal from Verizon Wireless, Steve Van Dinter, has been doing kind of a gift buying guide for technology fans each week since Thanksgiving, and he's going to continue that right now.
Hi there, Mike. Well, I'm back this week with some more great gift ideas under $100. And first up, home automation the easy way with the Wemo Mini Smart Plug. You can add Wi-Fi capabilities to anything that plugs in. This smart outlet connects to your home's Wi-Fi network. Now, anything you plug in from your coffee pot to holiday lighting can be controlled via a smartphone app. And when paired with a Google Home or Google Home Mini, you guessed it, you can control via voice as well. Well, next, there's no need to worry about running out of power when you're packing the Kate Spade Slim Battery Bank. Its slim, sleek design means it'll fit easily into your purse or backpack. Not to mention, it's quite the attractive-looking device. And with its built-in lightning tip, there are no connectors you've got to worry about carrying around. And finally, music to keep you going this holiday season, courtesy of the Braven Stride 360. Durability, sound quality, and looks, this Bluetooth speaker has it all. And its convenient size makes it easy to carry with you anywhere. It's also dustproof, waterproof, and shockproof, so you don't need to worry about the elements hurting it. And if a call comes in while using it, there's no need to pick up the phone. Thanks to built-in noise-canceling microphones, you can have clear conversations, even in a noisy environment. With this week's traveling technology tip, I'm Steve Van Dinter from Verizon.
All right, we'll put links, Steve, to all of the products that you just suggested right on the show notes for this episode. And you can find those by going to roadtrekking.com/169, roadtrekking.com/169. Traveling technology part of the podcast brought to you each week by Verizon Wireless, which operates America's most reliable wireless network. When they say better matters, they mean it. Only Verizon ranked highest in leading network studies in multiple tests year after year that measure network quality performance in the United States. They win this over and over again. Can your network say that? If you are stuck on the wrong network, head over to Verizon and get unstuck.
Time now for Off the Beaten Path, a unique RV podcast travel suggestion you probably won't find in a guidebook. Here's Mike.
All right. This week, we're going to tell you about a place that we visited, I don't know, 4 or 5 years ago with all of our kids. We kind of did a family vacation where we towed a travel trailer behind our Class B motorhome. And it's Mesa Verde National Park. And the key attraction there, of course, are the amazing archaeological cliff dwellings of the ancestral Pueblo people, who lived in that area between 600 and 1300 years ago in structures that were built within caves and under outcroppings and cliffs. Very elaborate construction and amazingly well preserved even today. In fact, the ruins at Mesa Verde are the largest archaeological preserve in the U.S. and they're scattered across 81 square miles. The park was created in 1906 by President Theodore Roosevelt, and there are lots of spots to see them, and you can even crawl through them. That's what we did. I don't know. Jennifer, how hard was that? If you're in reasonably good shape, there's a couple ladders you have to climb, right?
It was easy to get around.
Yeah. I mean, if you needed a cane or something, I think it'd be you probably would not want to try it, but It wasn't that hard.
No, it wasn't.
Of course, what you say is easy is, you know, you don't break a sweat, you know, in 100 degree weather running 20 miles, but it isn't that hard. So don't worry about that. And they have lots of, you know, they're used to people coming through and they got places to sit in the shade. It gets pretty hot in the summer. The interesting thing about it is nobody knows why the ancestral Pueblo people settled there because it's an arid, hot, high desert. And even more mysteriously, nobody knows why, after living there for centuries, they just suddenly moved. But these sandstone dwellings are, as we said, amazingly well-preserved, and the U.S. Forest Service does a great job of keeping them maintained, and you can walk in and amongst them. They have interpreters there that'll explain it all. And the place to camp is where we stayed, at the Moorfield Campground. It's a really nice little area. It's nestled into this scenic little canyon about 4.5 miles off U.S. 160 from the park entrance. And it's a big campground. They have 267 sites. It seldom fills up. And that's because all but 15 of those sites are for boondockers, for dry camping only. And of those 15 sites that have full hookups, none accommodate RVs over 45 feet in length. The Class A congestion that turns so many other campgrounds into tinniminium complexes is absent at the Moorfield Campground there. So check it out. Every site has a lot of space between its neighbors. You're in a bunch of beautiful gamble oaks and tall prairie grasses and wildflowers, lots of wildlife around. I put a review we did, an in-depth review, and lots of photos on the a link to it on the show notes. And you just go to roadtrekking.com/167 and just scroll down till you see the Off the Beaten Path section. And you'll find the link right there. Off the Beaten Path is brought to you every week by Steinbring Motor Coach, Road Trek's newest dealer and a third-generation family business in Minnesota's beautiful Chain of Lakes region, built on quality motorhomes and excellent pricing and service. Jennifer and I visited these guys over the summer and just came away so impressed by the Steinbring family out there. They have been bringing you the best products and service within the transportation industry since 1917. And their sales staff at Steinbring brings decades of experience in the recreational vehicle industry. They're celebrating 100 years of business this year. With it's a third-generation family business. Steinbrings still work there. And along with being named a Blue Ribbon dealer year after year after year, they have a really great lineup of new RVs, new Newmar Class A motorhomes, and Road Trek Class B motorhomes. Also for sale are pre-owned coaches from popular brands like Road Trek, Winnebago, Itasca, Tiffin, Fleetwood, Hollywood Rambler, Monaco, along with a wide selection of consignments. So whether you are looking for a Class A or a Class B, Class C, a diesel pusher, gas, toy hauler, make sure you check them out. Steinbring Motor Coach. Besides their great sales, they have great award-winning service.
What's happening? Time now to check the RV calendar of events and gatherings you need to know about.
Now, a whole bunch of RV events will be starting up in just a few weeks, right after we get through the holidays. But there is a big one this weekend, December 7th through the 10th, and it's out in California, in Indio, California. It is the Riverside County Fair and National Date Festival grounds right there for the 20th annual Palm Springs Area RV Show and Sale. So check it out, the Palm Springs Area Show. It's the 7th through the 10th in Indio, California.
Traveling and celebrating the RV lifestyle. This has been the RV Podcast with journalist Mike Wendland. Got a question for the next episode? Just click the send voicemail link on the RVpodcast.com blog. Till then, we'll see you out there, somewhere off the beaten path.
That about wraps up this episode 169 of the podcast. We'll be back next Wednesday, and of course every Wednesday with a new edition of the podcast. Be sure and check meantime on our roadtrekking.com RV lifestyle blog and our RV lifestyle channel on YouTube. The YouTube address is just rvlifestylechannel.com. It'll get you right there. And we have a couple of videos that we put up new every single week. And, of course, new content on the roadtrekking.com blog almost every day. And then there's all the activity we have on social media and our newsletter. Oh my goodness, lots of stuff. We want to thank you, though, for listening to this podcast and being a part of the program. Please don't forget to use that voicemail message function at roadtrekking.com and send us your comments, your questions. We'd love having you be a part of the podcast. Till next week, on behalf of my wife, Jennifer, our dog, Bo, I'm Mike Wendland saying we'll see you out there road trekking across North America. Bye-bye, everybody.